This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to put your predictions to the test? With Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your views on key political, economic, and even climate indicators. Simply answer yes or no. For example, will the year-over-year change in the U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.4% in March of 2025? Or will the average U.S. temperature in 2024 be greater than 54 degrees? If you agree, well, you buy a yes contract. If you don't, buy a no. It's that easy. Contracts cost $2.99, and correct predictions earn $1 at settlement, and incorrect ones settle at zero. Forecast contracts are commission-free, plus earn 3.83% APY on your investment with an interest-like incentive coupon, and new accounts get USD or US dollar $3 to trade forecast contracts. Visit IBKR.com/forecast and make your predictions today. Because the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Member SIPC.
The disciplined investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
December, not all it was cracked up to be. 2024 is coming to an end, and we're looking towards and forward to a great 2025. Inspired by market wizards with our guest, the renowned Jack Schwager. All this and much more on episode number 901 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome to this edition, this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz, your host of this podcast, as well as the co-host of DH Unplugged, where myself, John C. Dvorak, get together. We talk about all sorts of things every single week. That is a Tuesday edition, and we're talking about the latest news items and what is going on around the world in our own manner. We do it in a way that is a little unusual. Been doing it for many, many years, and I got to tell you something. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. Thank you for your great comments, and everything that you do as a listener. This isn't a one-sided operation. This isn't just us talking to you, me coming on and just blathering information. It is all about what I believe is what you want, what you've told me that you want. And what we've done is we've created this way of education and gaining knowledge into the areas of finance on a regular basis with the idea that we are going to create this place in order to get towards that level of financial security and awareness and education and just security into our lifetimes. So that's what we've done. And another year is in the books, 2024. So I'm very happy to report that the listenership is better than ever. The guests have been top notch. And we have a lot more planned and in store for 2025. We're going to spend part of 2025 right in the beginning, refreshing and reviewing and looking at what we've done. But we're also going to take the opportunity to reset, to spend a moment looking at what we have done, what we can do, and what we should be doing. Looking at the things that we've done right, the things that we've done wrong, the things that we can do better at, the things that we want to just simply say, you know what? That's not for me. Looking inside, looking outside, going through the very nature of who we are and how we can get to be that investor that we want to be. Or if we can't, acknowledge that as well. And say, you know, there's some other way that I need to spend my time and maybe somebody else should be handling my investments. Whatever is right for you is what we are going to get towards. And what I have in store and aligned is, yes, guests, of course, but more so a few episodes we're going to spend right towards the first month or so of 2025 is really digging into the things that make the most sense and how to understand how to make the best of our investments, of our finances, making sure that things like the estate plan is taken care of. You know, what we do for clients a lot of times is not only all about investing. A lot of it is. A lot of time is spent on the money. But the things that are peripheral to that, that are involve our well-being, whether it's, let's say, insurances or even taxes, looking at the estate plan and really the plan itself, looking at the goals, the wishes, the desires, all the things that we have and want to look at on a regular basis, looking at the fears and the things that keep us awake at night, looking at the gratitude and the successes, the things that we can be proud of and brag about. All these things go into this process. And the disciplined investor, my goal on this podcast is to make sure that you have all the tools that you need to make sure that you are just successful at whatever level that you want to be. And I think we've gotten there already, but we're going to continue, refine, sharpening the saw, making sure that we're honing it on a regular basis. That's what we're going to do into 2025. The things that you need to know, well, of course, number one, I do appreciate all the comments and the feedback. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the contact us, whatever you want to talk about, things you want to relay, comes right to us and I'll make sure to answer you back personally. That's what I do. And also, if you make sure to subscribe, whether it's on YouTube or Spotify or whether it's Apple Podcasts or Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts from, please leave a review. Maybe just, if you haven't done so already, maybe it's time to do so. Tell your friends, your family over the holidays, over the new year, hey, I got something for you and it's going to be the greatest gift you've ever gotten. You got to listen to this guy Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. That's what you should be doing. Spreading the word, spread the gospel, so to speak. And with that, I thought we would end the year with a great person that is that I admire greatly. He is an author extraordinaire. He has been with the greats, the best, what he calls the wizards of Wall Street, the wizards of the market. He's written several books and just an amazing individual. He's written The Unknown Market Wizards, 2020, Market Wizards in 89, The New Market Wizards, 2092. He updated Market Wizards in 12, Stock Market Wizards, 2001, Hedge Fund Market Wizards, 2012. The Little Book of Market Wizards, the list goes on and on and on. How about we get right to it right now? Because he, I think, is going to knock our socks off. And our guest today is Jack Schwager. And I'm very excited to have him because he is a gentleman who has inspired many a financial advisor, investment advisor, hedge fund, and continues to dig deep into understanding the success of one in the investing world. So, Jack, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, Andrew.
You know, I want to start at the beginning because you've written many books, as I mentioned earlier, all the market wizards and things that you've done and the various areas, incubators that you have. I guess I want to start with and set the stage for our audience today and ask you what initially inspired you to write the Market Wizards books?
Oh, Market Wizards. Well, my first job out of graduate school was as a market analyst, and that led to an interest in trading. Easy to see that connection. Mm-hmm. And after I'd been in the business for about, I was a research director at that point. I decided to take a sabbatical and write a book on what's called Complete Guide to the Futures Markets, this was written back in 84 and revised in 2017. But basically, I didn't think there was a really good, thorough, comprehensive text on futures market analysis. So I figured I'd write it and I took a year off to do it. And that book did okay for what it was. You know, it wasn't a mass audience book, obviously. And I was lucky enough to know some really great traders. And I had the idea, you know, it kind of would be fun to do a book where I go around the country and like interview, you know, the best traders and try to discern what separates them from the rest of us. And I had that idea, but I was at the time a research, I had taken another job as a research director. And that's more than a full-time job. So it's easy not to put it off because, you know, there's not really time. Then I got invited to a lunch with another publisher, and they were familiar with the analytical book I had written, and they wanted me to do like a whole series of analytical books. And I said, you know, gee, I have no interest. I've done that. You know, you do that. It's very intensive work.
Very intensive, right? Yeah.
A limited audience. And I said, if I was going to do anything else, I'd do a more mass market book. And they said, well, what do you have in mind? And I said, I told them this idea. I wish I knew where I got the name Market, where that popped into my head. But I had that was my working mental title if I ever did the book. So I told them about the concept of Market Wizards, and they said, great, do that. So that was a catalyst. So I had a push to do it. So nights and weekends, I basically wrote Market Wizards, and that's how it happened.
But how did you get the foot in the door to see? I guess this is the first question. It's a combined question. Who was your first market wizard that you interviewed, and how do you actually get your foot in the door?
Okay, so I was, like I said, I mentioned, I was lucky enough to know something. So, for example, the first chapter of the first Market Wizards book was called, it was a fellow named Michael Marcus. And ironically, and this is where fate steps in, and I'm a big believer that if you are successful in life, you know, don't think you're great. There's luck involved, you know, when everybody's
successful.
So obviously you have to be able to capitalize on luck, but, you know, there is luck. So as luck would have it, the person whose job I was taking was Michael Marcus, who was leaving to become a trader full time. And so we met as he was going out, and he was clearing out his desk and I was coming in. And he was in New York for a few years. He used to get together for lunch every few weeks. So I knew him personally. And so he was still, he was a super private person. And I don't think he ever did another interview in his life. He's no longer, he passed away a year or two ago. But we had a mutual acquaintance who kind of gave him the extra push. And so he agreed to do it. And then he felt good about how the interview went. And he said, you know who you should interview.
Oh.
And he gives me the best trader he knows, you know. And I would ask people I interviewed, who would you recommend they speak to? So some names, so knowing, and also through Michael Marcus, I knew Bruce Kovner, who went on to found Caxton Corp, one of the great traders of the modern era. And so I know him personally as well. And because of that personal relationship, again, Bruce Kovner, I don't know, he may have done one other interview in his life or two more recently, but at the time I interviewed him, he was, again, real private, wouldn't talk to anybody. But he trusted
him. Is the privacy issue that you mentioned twice here, is that they had just no desire to give away the secret sauce? Or was it a personal matter?
Yeah, so I think on some level, everybody's concerned about, you know, saying too much. In his case, he's just like, you know, was a private person, didn't want the publicity. But what was happening, he said it. In fact, it's in the book, I believe. The interview was, he said something like, you're probably wondering why I agreed to do this. And kind of answered his own question. And he explained that he was getting so big, he was getting bigger at the time I interviewed him, that there were stories appearing about him in the press without his participation. Mm. And he felt they weren't accurate. And so he trusted
set the record straight.
Yeah. So he trusted me to do an accurate portrayal. And so that's how I get. So, and some people I didn't know, but I knew they had done extremely well. And I approached him. And at some point, I'm sure, they probably asked me who else is in the book, and I had some good names to mention, and sort of the book came together.
You don't have to answer the question with a specific on this, but were there people that you interviewed that you're like, you know, after the interview, this is not a market wizard. It's more like a flash in the pan, or maybe even somebody that wouldn't really great, but not, you know, good, but not great.
Yeah. So basically I tried to do my homework, knowing what their records were before I interviewed them. So that didn't happen. Now there are cases where people I interviewed, obviously you have a regression to the mean to some, but it's when I'm interviewing people, they've had such extraordinary records, it's almost impossible for them to continue on.
I understand that. That's hard.
Take example, somebody like Bruce Kovner, who did continue to be very successful his whole career. But when I interviewed him, he had literally an 88% compounded return over a decade, right?
So you which can't is unbelievable, by the way. That's an unbelievable
88%
number.
Over 10 years. You can't keep on doing that, especially as you get bigger. And, he ended up managing tens of billions. You can't do that with that size. So there's going to be regression, but he was still quite good. He still had an excellent record overall. But you did have people who did phenomenal. And then at some point after the point I had interviewed them, then had a period of where they certainly tailed off, or in some cases even lost money. So that certainly happens. But at the time, before I finished the book, by the time I'm interviewing, even if a bad year, their record is still good enough that it wouldn't change my mind.
You know, it's interesting because you have these people that have these incredible records. I mean, 88% over 10 years is just an absurd number. I mean, the right. Compounded effect of that over time is wealth. I mean, right? It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's
wealth.
Impossible. You know? It's impossible.
I don't even think Bitcoin did that over the last 10 years. Maybe it did. But the point is, here you mentioned something great, that there was a time that these people also then had maybe a downturn. I would venture to say that one of the traits that made them so successful was they were able to get back on the horse somehow, maybe not at those levels, but figure out how to self-correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, particularly in their early careers. A number of people I interviewed with great records, like Marcus is probably the best. There's no better example than Marcus, actually went through this litany of failures in his early years of trading, where he just kept on losing all his money, and in one case, even lost his mother's money. You know, and his mother came from a lower middle class. I mean, she lost whatever savings she had, you know. So, I mean, just a horrible thing. It's just sort of painful to listen to. It was painful to listen to his story, you know. But he then went on he went to work for Commodities Corp, which is a famous firm. It's changed completely over the years, but at the time was a firm which was hiring traders and then giving them an allocation. And he went on to work for them. They gave him a starting stake at $30,000. He literally made $80 million for them.
Wow.
Out of a $30,000 stake. And that was with them taking money out every year for expenses, you know? So somebody who was, but he had that resilience. He just kept on failing and kept on believing he could do it. And he did it.
I mean, you look at an example of similar, where like a Jeff Bezos, right? Jeff Bezos back in 1999, 2000, you're like, oh, that's done. Thank you. Move on. And the series of ups and downs over the next two decades of that company, of that stock, but someone who created billions of wealth for themselves by believing, by doing, by sticking, and it turned out. Whereas other people may have achieved, let's say, less than mediocrity because they're constantly playing it like, I don't want to lose any money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're too caught, I mean, that's a fine line. You do want to preserve capital, which is essential, but you have to be able to take risk. Otherwise, you can't succeed.
Yeah.
But Bezos, incidentally, is interesting that in another market, stock market wizards, by third market wizards book, I interviewed D.E. Shaw, who's a famous quant, a computer scientist, mathematician, and he founded one of the early firms, quant firms, like Renaissance is better known, but D.E. Shaw is one of those type of firms. And the Bezos worked for him, and And Desjardins was also having sort of developing companies within the firm, besides being a trading firm. And Bezos was working on what became Amazon, Amazon. And he had a great position, and he could have been set, with money as much as, any reasonable person would need. But he left that to start Amazon, complete the startup venture and take the chance because he just believed in it.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, after you've interviewed all these top traders, because I think what I think of all this, I always come back to the same question is, what's the one trait that all these successful traders shared? It's got to be something.
Yeah. Well, they share a lot of traits. They share a lot of traits. Just throughout a sum. Almost all of them, I say almost because there were one or two exceptions through all the books I've done, but they are truly exceptions. So almost all traders have an immense emphasis on risk management. And almost all of them will tell you that managing risk is more important than the methodology they use. It's the most important thing. And without that, even traders who are good will sooner or later blow up because they just have one trade that they just gets away from them, and they can't throw in a towel if they don't have that risk management principle. And it can wipe out a lot of success. So that's one thing that it's almost universal. Also, they tend to be, as not surprising, they tend to be highly independent.
Independent thinking.
They talk to other people, whatever, but they truly believe in just follow, as one trader said, following their own light. They are truly, and this is true no matter where they may be, say, on the political spectrum, which is something mm-hmm. like, which has no commonality because they range from very liberal to very conservative. But regardless of where they are, say, that type of spectrum, they are still very independent in terms of their thinking and life philosophy and so forth.
You would think so, because if you following the crowd will just give you average.
Yeah, well, yeah, or worse than, the crowd on balance will do worse than the indexes. So, yeah. As one trader I interviewed said, he said, people have evolved, biologically have evolved so that we are so poorly attuned to trading that people will do worse than random. And to emphasize it, he says, I don't mean like the monkey throwing darts at the Wall Street Journal doing as well as managers, money managers. He says the monkey's going to do better because he's not inhibited by human emotions. And human emotions, the way we've evolved, is to do the types of things that make it more than random likely that you'll come out behind. And those are things like, basically, in his words, seeking comfort. We seek comfort. And if you kind of seek comfort, you're going to end up doing things that are just not right to make money.
Right. All right, let's stick around for a second with Jack Schwager, the renowned author. I saved him, actually, Jack knows, I saved him for the end of year 2024 discussion, just to wrap up some of the psychology and some of the things that great investors do so that we can think about how to be great investors ourselves into 2025 and the years and years to come from there. But hang on, Jack, I want to ask you about some psychology when we get back.
Sure.
And let's take a moment just to talk about something very important. Let's talk about Interactive Brokers, because Interactive Brokers, you know this, it's the professional gateway to the world's markets. Interactive Brokers offers commissions starting at zero on U.S. listed stocks and ETFs, with low commissions on other products, and there are no added spreads, ticket charges, or even account minimums. Now, clients in over 200 countries and territories trade stocks and options, futures, currencies, bonds, funds, and more on 150 global markets from a single unified platform. You got to know also that clients earn interest rates of up to 4.08% on instantly available cash and pay margin rates up to 49% lower than the industry. You can even earn extra income on your lendable shares, and IBKR's powerful award-winning trading platforms help every level investor succeed, from beginner to advanced on mobile, web, and desktop. Learn more at IBKR.com. And we're back with Jack Schwager, and we were talking about what separated and the traits that separated one greatness, really. So were there any trader interviews that you had that surprised you, where the success that they had kind of defied conventional wisdom?
Well, in terms of numbers, I mean, lots of them. And particularly in the last book, Market Wizard book I did, which was called Unknown Market Wizards, where I deliberately tried to find these isolated solo traders just trading their own account that nobody knew existed. Nobody knew of them. They didn't manage other people's money. And in all cases, I mean, I got their track records. I got their, you know, brokerage statements or whatever. And some of the, and I was expecting, with all the computerization, with all these giant quant firms, that it would now be much more difficult for the individual traders to stand out. Like when I did my first Market Wizards book, where was written in 88, where I was interviewing people who had basically traded in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, pre-PCs, pre all this, you know, sort of the pre-supercomputers and, mm-hmm. and quant firms with 500 mathematicians and physicists working for them. So I said, you know, I thought to myself, well, there's no way I'm going to find like the types of, like a Michael Marcus type track record. And shockingly, I came, there are a number of traders in that book, which may have had the best track records, among the best of any in any book I did. And I was surprised. I mean, I'm talking to people literally. I mean, one fellow literally did over 300% annualized for 12, 13, 14 years, something, you know, well over 10 years. And that, now that number sounds unbelievable. And it, and I could not have believed it if I didn't actually see the track record. But I should be clear that he would make money. He make this phenomenal return every year, take the money out and invest it in other things. So he wasn't compounding it.
No, but still, okay, so?
Yeah, he was trading a couple million, you know, every year. And then just, right. You know, turning
it, you know, oh, yeah. Darn. I know, obviously, if he compounded, it would be some other astonishing number. But a 300% year, 300% return in 5 years is fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But he couldn't, in many of these cases, they can't compound because their size, they would be too big to do what they were doing, you know, so.
But the good news is that they did amass wealth for themselves.
Yeah.
Big wealth. So, in your books, when I read them, there's a couple of things that stood out to me as I read through, you know, because obviously each chapter, each fellow, each investor, I should say. I think I picked out, and maybe this is just me, I guess what we all are, we'll pick out what we want, but discipline and the psychology and mindset of the investors and the market wizards often stand out as these critical factors. And I think that when we take the opposite discussion there of why people fail, it seems to me those are the two things that are missing. You know, the discipline, as you mentioned, one of the most important things is downside risk or risk mitigation, or, you know, or looking at that, but also psychology, right? The psychology to tune out, I mean, there's a billion things, but tune out the noise, do it alone, find your own things, stick to a process, you know, all that. So what is it that the traders that aren't successful, why can't they, what are they struggling with all this?
Well, I kind of believe, particularly after doing all these books, that the number one reason people fail is because they only pay attention to getting into the market, and they don't pay any attention or very little attention to risk management and also to a lesser extent, to getting out of the market, you know. So everybody's always trying to find an entry method that's great, and that's sexy and that's fun. But really, the most important thing is making sure you never give back too much money to the market. Otherwise, I mean, as long as you have chips, you can play. But once you blow your chips, you're out of the game. And I think the most common reason that people fail is that they can't. It's ironic. The reason people fail the most prevalent reason people fail is because they're trying to avoid losing. And in people's mind, losing is getting out of a losing trade. So they don't consider it losing until they actually close it.
Oh, the old, it's a paper loss. Is that what you're saying to me?
What's that?
It's just a paper loss.
Yeah. I mean, so mentally, say, you know, people, you know, if they buy a stock, let's say at $50 and it goes down to 30, and maybe it's going from 30 down to zero, right? But they could say, well, you know, I'm behind, but this is going to bounce back, and they keep on rationalizing.
Well, I buy more.
Yeah, so they don't crystallize the loss in their mind until they actually take the position. So they want to, at least typically the line is, I'll get out when I'm even, you know. And why is getting out even so important? Because if the position gets back to even, then they can say I wasn't wrong, I didn't make a mistake.
It's basically a process of soothing the psychology that I am not wrong. I'm not dumb. I'm not stupid. I'm not a bad person. And I'm no good. I'm no good at this.
So it really comes down to ego, and that an inability to take the loss is ironically why most people who fail totally fail. That's really, really.
And that in itself, by the way, is a really good lesson in technical analysis and charting and why certain price levels are those price levels that are overhead resistance, because people just want to get out after it's been down to a point, and they're just willing to take, if it gets to $40, just first of all, I'll get out. Second of all, I'll never trade that stock and I'll never do it again. I promise. You know?
Right.
So that's that line. That's the line. That's the, I'm no good. I'm not wrong, and let me just get out and I'll be a good person and do the right thing line in the chart. Now, you've studied traders from all backgrounds and styles, you know, from small to unknowns, to the big boys, to the startups, to the uber successful, to the boom, 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 absolute just consistency. Right. And do you think that anyone can become a great trader, or is there some kind of, I don't know, some innate quality that some people have?
Okay, so this is just opinion, and it's a good question, and I don't know if there's a really hard answer there, but I'll tell you, my opinion is trading is like any other profession. Can anybody become a world-class marathon runner? No. I mean, they can run a marathon being completely out of shape, you know, starting out completely out of shape. If they're dedicated, anybody can run a marathon if they train enough. And you know,
they may not win though, but yes.
So some success is possible, but to become a world-class marathon runner, they have to have the right body type. And that's only a small percent of the population will have the type of body that is physically capable, no matter how hard you're trained, to achieve that particular goal. You know, or basketball, or, you know, say, or any sport, you know, it's the same thing. Only a small fraction of the population has the physical makeup or mental makeup in some cases to become world-class musicians too, right? I mean, anybody I suppose can learn to play the violin, but it's only going to be a tiny fraction of a percent of the world population that has the innate, would have the innate skill to be a solo violinist with a major philharmonic orchestra, right? It's a very small pool of people.
There's so many things, right? Because what you're saying is there's so many things that have to go into it. It's mental, it's physical, it's ability, it's the time, place. It's all these things have to be wrapped up and really working right. And that's why there aren't a billion market wizards. That's why, you know, there are.
Yeah. So that's the point. So I think like any other profession, you know, not everybody's going to be a market wizard. You need to have, and when it comes to trading, it's more of a mental thing than a physical thing.
Yeah.
So, like I think only a small part of the population will have that particular mental makeup that will make it possible for them to have extraordinary success in the markets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not everybody that can do, but everybody can get better by trying to learn from the people who are super successful.
If you were starting out from scratch today as a trader, or if you could give, I don't want to say advice, but some thoughts on this, what kind of strategy or market would you focus on, considering all the interviews, all the things that you've learned, all the research you've done, all the years you've seen as a market participant yourself, right? And the things that you've, and adding one other factor, the significant change in all of it over the last couple of three decades.
Yeah. Well, there's been tremendous changes in the market. We can talk about that in a moment if you want. But basically, from the very first book I did on this topic, one of the lessons that came out of it was that you have to, everybody had a different methodology. And basically, the lesson was you have to find a methodology that fits your personality. So, like in that first book, I think somebody like Jim Rogers, who, you know, started the Soros Fund, Quantum Fund with George Soros, and went on to be a successful private investor. He has complete disdain for chart analysis, technical analysis. One of his lines in that interview was, "I never met a rich technician," and he paused, unless you count those who sell their services. Complete cynicism.
Yep.
About technical analysis. Then you have somebody in the same book, Marty Schwartz, who was on the fundamental side for his basic Wall Street career, and in his words, lost money every year, and then he got rich as a technician. So you have completely different minds. They can't both be right, right? So the point is, they're right for themselves. In other words, Rogers' belief system was such that he only believed in fundamentals and thought any technical chart stuff was nonsense. And if he tried to do that type of approach, he would definitely fail because his whole mental philosophy is counter to that. Same for Schwartz, apparently didn't click with fundamental approaches, but he did find that technical approaches worked phenomenally for him. So the lesson is, there is no one type of approach. There is no type of market. All these things are dependent on the individual. So just like you can't answer a question from a random person who you don't know what they look like, what size suit should I get? Well, that makes no sense. The size could be anywhere. It depends on the person. There's a suit that'll be right for that particular person. And that's the mental perspective I think one should have about trading or investing, is you got to find an approach that you believe in, that you feel you have some talent in trying to utilize, and you have to discover it for yourself. You don't know it a priori. You have to kind of try different things, read different books, try different markets. And for people who are successful, they eventually find an approach that clicks, and that may not be the approach they started with.
So when we touched on this issue of the last few decades, clearly been a big change in the markets. And we look at the rise of things like algorithmic trading, and I don't even know if we're going to get AI trading, what the hell that's going to do to things. But, you look at that and high frequency, that whole genre of, we figured out the markets. That's that genre, right? We figured out the markets and, Jim, what's his name? The man who figured out the markets, that wrote the book.
Jim Simmons.
Yeah. He figured out the markets, and then he had a really bad year. I think he had a terrible year the year after or something after he put the book out.
Well, Renaissance, his firm, that firm, and Jim is no longer alive, but that firm did have, they may have the best record that's ever been compiled in the markets.
Mm-hmm.
They charged enormous fees before they gave all the money back. That flagship fund. They started an equity fund that didn't do quite as well. It still did well, but it wasn't in the same order. But their flagship fund, which they eventually just kept in-house for the people working there, I think it compounded some crazy number, like before fees, like 50 or 60% over a period of like 30 years or something. Just probably the best track record that's ever been compiled. So they did come up, but I would say, of course, they were completely secretive and never indicated exactly what they were doing. But I'd be pretty sure that what they were doing was literally, and these were mathematicians or quant guys, what they were doing was literally trading hundreds of strategies, this is my guess. Trading hundreds of strategies, each with a small edge, very small edge, like a roulette, a smaller edge maybe even than the casinos. But because there were so many different strategies that it didn't make a difference just by the law of large numbers, mm-hmm. they had enough trades that even if a strategy had a 50.5% probability, of coming out ahead, over if you do that hundreds of times, using hundreds of different strategies and over thousands of trades a year, or tens of thousands of trades, who knows how many, I think they were trading from very short term to a little bit longer. That's how I think. So it wasn't any particular system. It was really probably a conglomeration of a tremendous amount of systems, and many of them, I believe, probably involving trading one market against a market, and not only one market against another market, but trading, markets against baskets of markets, yeah. looking for all types of relationships. Right. So it's not a single approach.
So quickly, because I have one other question about this. Quickly, is there still room for the human edge with all that being said?
So, like I said, I was amazed to find out that there are these individual traders who still are able to do enormously well. And I didn't mention it before, but the one I was most astounding was a trader. This is a funny story. I get an email a number of years ago from a trader saying, you may not believe this, but, I started out with a $5,000 account and I turned it into $50 million. And, I said, look, I'm not planning to do another book. At the time, I wasn't, although it turned out a year and a half later, I was. I said, but, it's a really, phenomenal story. And if you can prove it, I'd love to interview if I do another book. So I put his name in a file that I keep a possible candidates to interview. And when I decided to do another book a year and a half ago, which was The Unknown Market Wizards, I got in touch with him and he sent me all his brokerage statements going back to like 2006. And I compiled them and, he was real. And a couple of years later, I was doing a revised, this was post-COVID, because after the book came out, we had COVID, we had that bear collapse, then the Super Bowl market, and then we had another bear market. So there were a lot of things happening. So I thought a couple of years later, before the paperback came out, I would go back and do update interviews for all of them. And while I didn't ask him to prove it, I have no reason to doubt it. He indicated that he had virtually quintupled that stake, a quarter of a billion.
Wow.
This is starting with $5,000 20 years ago.
It's extraordinary.
Apparently, it's still possible.
Exactly. So finishing this all up is, aside from me, who's the one trader you haven't interviewed but we'd love to sit down with?
The person I always...
You're supposed to laugh and say, of course I want to sit down with you. Go ahead.
the one person that always comes to mind that I would have loved to interview that I could never get through to him, past his coterie of people, to agree, I assume some, when I spoke to people in his organization, they probably did pass along the request, was George Soros. So, he's like, one of the greatest traders that ever lived. Then I would have, if I had the one person I would have liked to interview, that would have been it.
Great stuff. Jack Schwager, we're going to put all the information about how to actually find one of your many, 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 many books, as well as... Fun Seater, right? You're still doing the Fun Seater thing.
Yeah,
it's great stuff. That was a great addition to what you were doing. I think it's a really smart idea.
Yeah, so I should mention just briefly, very briefly, Fund Seeders, you know, undergone, but like any startup, we had our financing issues, and which prevented us from getting any, you know, growing it. But this very recently, we did sign an agreement and merge with a larger firm. It's not been publicly announced yet, but within a month or so, I believe, a month or two, there should be a fund that starts based on allocating to traders who signed up with Fund Seeder.
Right.
And the site's being completely revamped. And one of our problems always was we didn't have the capacity to make it linkable to enough brokers. And so that's going to be happening over the next couple of months as well.
Good.
So like major brokers, Schwab and stuff, we hope to link to. And so within a couple of months, that site should be completely revamped and actually combined with the part of the company that forms multi-trader funds. So there would be a way then for people who have no access to, you know, being able to manage money.
To do it.
Being able to sign up and demonstrate by their actual track records that they have talent and then getting an allocation.
Well, great. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, episode number 901 for the show notes, which will have all the links to everything that we just talked about. Thank you so much. Have a great, happy new year. Best of love to all you and yours.
Thanks. It's fun talking to you again.
Thanks. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Wishing you a wonderful new year. Wishing you all the best that life has to offer. And I'm going to be right here with you when the clock strikes. And it's time for the next podcast in 2025. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.